of hanging round. Ain't no use, I'd put you down. There's no love left in my heart for you. Ain't no use for you to cry. Ain't no use, this is goodbye. You've been wrong so many times. Now I'm through. The best of my years you have wasted away. You cause so many tears, but time has come that you must pay. Ain't no more for you to say.
Yes. That is one and only Dakota Staton with Ain't No Use. It's from her incredible 1957 album, The Late Late Show, also the title of one of her greatest hits. It's her first full-length recording with 12 tracks on Ain't No Use as the closer of that album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And in a way, the song hints at where we're going today. And this should be our anthem. It's just no use. Don't try playing with our minds. Don't even try it. We have a handle on where people are trying to take us. So let's start with three words and their derivation. Terror, terrorism, terrorists. We want to talk about the state and race-based psychological warfare. It is indisputable, and it is also universally agreed, that last Friday's multi-location attacks in Paris that left more than 130 people dead and hundreds of others wounded was an act of terror. It is also indisputable, I would say, that not all acts of terror are classified as such, and yet somehow we seem to know what a terrorist is and what qualifies as an act of terrorism. Well, how is this done? How does this happen? Just yesterday we listened to Dr. Ali Tariq Ali talking about this very subject of how things get to qualify as terror and other things that should qualify as terror just do not. Who makes the determination? What is it all about? And what are we likely to discover when we discuss these terms and how they come into being, and therefore how we think of things and acts like this and people who do these things? Well, let's start with the definition of the word. The dictionary tells us that terror, as a noun, is the use of violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims. Pretty straightforward. At least you would think so. But if we use that definition, we come smack up against yawning contradictions, because there are things that come to our minds as acts of terror that just are not regarded as acts of terror. So I turned to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and I wanted to check on what the Federal Bureau of Investigation considers acts of terror. And they have several categories of terror. There's international terrorism. And it says these involve violent acts or acts dangerous to human life that violate federal or state law, acts that appear to be intended, one, to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, two, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or three, to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping, and occur primarily outside the territorial jurisdiction of the United States or transcend national boundaries in terms of the means by which they are accomplished, the persons they appear intended to intimidate or coerce, or the locale in which their perpetrators operate or seek asylum. Then, according to the FBI, there is a category of domestic terrorism. And there are three characteristics, it says, to this. These acts tend to involve dangerous to human life, that violate federal or state law, appear intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction or assassination or kidnapping, and occur primarily within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. Okay. And then there is the federal crime of terrorism as defined thus. Such a crime is calculated to influence or affect the conduct of government by intimidation or coercion, or to retaliate against government conduct, and is a violation of one of several listed statutes, including statutes relating to killing or attempted killing during an attack on a federal facility with a dangerous weapon, and killing or attempted killing of officers and employees of the United States. And that pretty much covers the federal description and definition of terrorism, and by extension, the name affixed to a person or persons engaging in this kind of activity. But you know, curiously, there are many things that come to mind that fit this category, these categories, that simply are not regarded as acts of terrorism. And then there are things that do fit these categories that the federal government and other entities, other authorities, do not seem to regard as terrorism. So the question we have to debate today is, how is it done? Who gets to decide what is terrorism? And what do you think are the component parts of terrorism? What examples, clearly we just said at the opening of the program, the attacks in Paris, no question, nobody would dare suggest that these were not terrorist acts. They were. All right. But what is unique about the latest rash of acts that are described as terrorist acts? What do we find? Very curious common threads here. And I was wondering what you might have thought about that. Now, for example, would we, by the federal government's definition, by the law, the definition by law of what terrorism is, are we neglecting to prosecute certain crimes that somehow evade categorization as acts of terrorism on U.S. soil or outside of the United States? Could you think of such issues and such examples that would raise the question of this strange circumstance by which things get called acts of terrorism, people get called terrorists, and some others just do not? Some things just are not acts of terrorism, although to your mind and to my mind, and even in terms of the definition by law, would be classified as acts of terrorism, but are absolutely not seen that way. I think we have to look at this question from the point of view of psychological warfare, because that in the end is a major component of what happens to us as a people. We are all conditioned to accept laws and the definition of laws and the scope of laws based on an evident need that the government sees. The government is in charge of deciding who and what is terrorism or a terrorist, and based on interests. So you see, it begins an interesting cycle. And so we are to readily and without question accept the label as it is applied, not according to the law, but according to the need to control the thinking of us all. Now, there are certain things I would say out and out, that's an act of terrorism. But they would say, absolutely not. You're crazy to call it terrorism. I would say, for example, slavery was a protracted period of terrorism. What is called the Civil War was a protracted period of terrorism in this country. But we are told that actually that's not what it was. It was the North and the South having a difference of opinion as to the philosophical underpinnings of what constituted or what should constitute a nation. I would say the genocidal acts directed against the First Nations of this country, of this hemisphere, protracted terrorism. I would say Jim Crow laws that encouraged bombings. I would say that the government's bombing, it was the first time the government used a bomb against its own citizens in Oklahoma. Act of terrorism. I would say that the targeting of the Black Panthers, state-sponsored terrorism. But people will say, no, that you're wrong. The press will tell me that I'm wrong. The government will tell me I'm wrong. I would say that sustained campaigns of denial of opportunity by the law is a form of terrorism that produces what today we call income inequality, poverty, the deliberate denial of access to opportunity, to income, to the resources of our society. These are forms of terrorism. the assassination of our leaders who question authority and who challenge the system. I would say these are acts of terrorism, but that's me, and I'm basing it on what I just read to you. That's what the FBI says. That's federal law. These are the classifications of terror. But I'm told consistently when we discuss, when I say we, I mean as a nation, when the nation discusses terror, what do we see? We see the same picture over and over again. When whites engage in terroristic acts against whites, it's not called terror. Is it? The North and South, good, the Civil War again. That wasn't terrorism. It was a war. It was a civil war. A civil war. When we hear of acts of terror outside of the United States, where whites are fully engaged with other whites or against other people, mostly people of color, these things are not discussed as acts of terror. These are not terroristic acts. The rounding up of Japanese Americans in the United States will never be classified under, even with these rules, even with these definitions of the federal government, will never be classified as an act of terror. And yet it was. So I asked a question today. How do these things get done? How do we arrive at labels that are not questioned and are accepted and, in fact, are reinforced by a sycophantic media that says what? Whatever you say, whoever you say is a terrorist is, in fact, a terrorist. And absolutely exempt from terrorism is the state. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. That's the first part of our discussion today. How do we arrive at these things? And do we not see an alarming consistency here in which race and notions of racial and cultural identity are now factoring in to the process of shaping our minds, not only about the act itself of terror, but affixing it permanently in our heads, that when you say Muslim, immediately you should, you know, word association, you associate it psychologically with Muslims and Arabs. Britain has never committed an act of terror. France has committed no acts of terror, nor Russia, nor the United States. No, but no European nation has committed acts of terror. That is very odd. Very, very odd indeed. And I'm submitting to you today that it is very, very important, very, very important for us to reconsider the moment we're in, because it is historic. It is historic. And it's historic because we are now entering the globalization of this phenomenon. The United States had, and other countries have done it on a case-by-case, country-by-country basis. But it is now being made uniform. There's a kind of effort, a cooperative effort, to engage in this form of race-based psychological warfare that has as its ultimate aim the conditioning of everyone concerned to accept as the definition what we know to be just wrong and questionable. Sean from New York, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts today?
Everything you just described is war. Everything you just described when you read all these definitions of terrorism can be also described as war. And in other words, they say war is an extension of politics. Well, you just mentioned that terrorism is an extension of politics. It's for a political means. So what I'm saying is this. When America sends drones to Pakistan and it's looking to kill militants, but it also kills, say, hundreds of civilians, the United States doesn't consider that an act of terror. It's just collateral damage. Those people don't matter. It's, oh, well, we killed them by accident, so on and so forth. So be it. And the same thing with the European powers. Whenever they inflict their violence, i.e. through military means, on other people, it's simply considered bringing justice, democracy, whatever you want to call it. But if anybody else does it, and in particular if it's done against us or them, meaning Europeans, it's considered an act of terror. Now, I say this to say that the terrorists themselves, where do you think they learned terrorism from? They learned it from all the Western powers. When you firebomb a city and kill 100,000 people, and those people are not combatants, they're just ordinary people living in their homes, that's terrorism. When you send B-52s into Vietnam and bomb every village into oblivion with napalm, that's terrorism. Remember, they're not combatants. They're not soldiers. They're not sailors. They're not airmen. They're civilians. So these so-called the terrorists learned this way of thinking and this way of reaching this political means from all the Western powers, lead country being the United States, and then followed by Britain, France, Germany, so on and so forth. So that's my thoughts in terms of when you say terrorism. So when I look at it, when I look at Israel bombing Gaza and kills 2,200 Palestinians from the air, that's terrorism. But we won't, in the West, won't consider it terrorism because it's against those other people. Those people that, quote unquote, those don't look like us. Those people that are, quote unquote, not white, so to speak. That's where the definition becomes for people here, for people in Europe, black and white.
Well, thank you, Sean, for getting the conversation started today. And thank you for your contribution. Very well thought out. Thank you.
Okay.
We're still in New York with Mitch. Hello, Mitch. You're on the air.
Okay. Good afternoon, Therese.
Good afternoon to you.
Good. I would like to know, and I've asked other people this, I've called the lawmakers and so forth, why isn't the KKK designated a terrorist organization and put out of business? The order, you know, they're allowed to parade. And actually, people, you know, we have, I've heard of, for instance, when they had this demonstration in Ferguson, the KKK were parading around in broad view for everybody to see. Yet and still, they've gone beyond they say, well, everybody is entitled to freedom of speech. They've gone beyond freedom of speech. They've perpetrated acts of violence against people of color, and no replications have been done about it. They should be designated a domestic terrorist organization and not allowed to be in business?
Well, I do know that the Southern Poverty Law Center has designated the, which monitors hate groups, has designated the KKK as such. But I want to ask you, based on the definition, the federal definition, which I read from the FBI's own website, this is how they describe, in fact, it's headlined, Definitions of Terrorism in the U.S. Code. Based on the categories of terrorism and their definition of terrorism and consequently terrorists, what comes to your mind as something that raises now a question where you thought, as you were now explaining with the Klan, you thought based on your knowledge and the coverage of this organization and the things that it clearly has been implicated in, that this is a terrorist group. But why is it that you think it is not viewed that way?
You know, I put that question to other people. You know, I spoke to, for instance, people at the, for instance, the law department at the NAACP, and they stated that, you know, it's an organization and they are allowed to be freedom of speech. But I see it as if freedom of speech, as long as you're European, and you are not, for instance, the Black Panthers, they never did anything to harm anybody of other, but they were designated a terrorist organization, and they were killed, put out of business, period, you know. But the KKK, they take responsibilities for doing things, the bombing of the children in the church down in Birmingham, the hangings and the lynching. At one time, after the Civil War, when they when Bedford Forrest started the KKK down in Chattanooga, the Grant, who was the president after Andrew Jackson, saw what was going on, and they were illegal. It was a legal group, and the government came down on them, and they were like, put out of business all over the country. But after let's say 1920, the government just ceased to exist to behind them, you know, after let's say that the Jim Crow laws were put in place, the lynchings were done, and they were taking responsibilities for them, and nothing has ever been done since.
So I come back to the question, the standing question. What, therefore, are you inclined to think about the application of this term, terrorism or terrorist?
It depends on who's in power that designate terrorists. For instance, America, the British, the French, Caucasians, they have all the guns. They have all the weapons. They consider themselves in charge. So whoever they designate as terrorist, to them, is a terrorist. Doesn't matter which side the law is on.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mitch, for your contribution. Thank you so much for calling today. 888-874-4888. We're still in New York. New York is ruling today. Matt, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Radio family, our PRN family.
Thank you.
Fans. first of all, when this happened, I felt, in terms of what happened in Paris, I felt very saddened and sobered. And although I selectively looked at the news, I knew it would be 24/7. And I knew the whole scenario, I knew the whole agenda in terms of basically what the script would be. Someone mentioned to me that in Nigeria, last week I think they said, there was some sort of bombing that 2,000 people were killed. You notice it's to me it's all contrived. I have no belief in the official story, and I'm in good company because Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, I think he wrote an article, something to the effect, 10 Reasons Why It's a False Flag. Also reading a book called The Terror Factory, and it's basically how the FBI in this country, in the U.S., has contrived all kinds of situations with informants, created alleged terrorist crime, and in most instances, they get big-time convictions, but all contrived and created. And there are just so many things in terms of even moving toward World War III that we would hope that the people would look at September 11th, 01, and how what a fictional character said to Sherlock Holmes, when the impossible can't happen, the improbable happens. So that's what I want to add. And I, just lastly, you, Teresa, I want to, in the Daily News from yesterday or whenever, they show they have two pages, Innocent Lives Lost. So notice the difference between the Russian bombing of the plane, 224 victims, you notice that there's a humanizing of certain victims as opposed to other victims, you know, just being faceless, you know. Right. So that's all I want to say.
Thank you so much for contributing. We go to Maryland. Marcus, you on the air.
Hello, you, Therese. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. And thank you very much for bringing up this topic. I think this, your question can probably be answered by reference to what was leaked into the news a few weeks ago. You might recall this so-called hacking group called Anonymous. And they
yes.
said they were going to leak the names of politicians and prominent people who were involved in the KKK.
Yes.
My theory on that is they leaked a few names, but we never really heard much after that. My theory is that the connection between politicians and the KKK is so vast and so extensive that, I mean, think about it. If you're a member of a particular group, you're not going to vote that group to be a terrorist organization, because then by implication and extension, you more or less called yourself a terrorist. And most people are not likely to see themselves in that context. So my thinking is the reason why the Klan has not been called a terrorist organization is because in many ways the Klan is the government, and the government is the Klan.
But bring us to the larger picture here. What do you think what do you think accounts for this, the fluidity with which some things are categorized as acts of terror and other things are not? What is the, in your head, what is the basis for that?
Well, I think, I mean, you treat some, you know, we're a pretty smart group of people who listen to you. And by the way, let me say hello belatedly to the PRN listening audience.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think we can put two and two together and see that it is largely racialized, and that if you are white, then you are a victim, and if you are not white or a person of color, then you're faceless. I mean, even the white Russians are faceless. You know, the lady before me said, you know, you never really heard a human interest story behind those 200 people who died on that plane. You know, and you have to be, I guess, a certain type of white to be a precious, highly prized victim. And if you're not in that category, then bad luck. We saw it when terrorist attacks took place in Nigeria and other parts of the people of color world. And they weren't given the sort of media attention, the wall-to-wall coverage that the victims in France were given. And I think we pretty much know why. It's largely racialized. It's there, it's obvious, and it's getting more and more blatant as we go along.
Thank you, Marcus, for calling.
Thank you.
We go to Montreal. Rudy, you're on the air. Rudy? Okay, Rudy's not there. We go to New Jersey. Louis, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Nishri. It's a pleasure
to
talk to you.
Thank you.
Mel Brooks once distinguished between comedy and tragedy by saying, comedy is when it happens to someone else. Tragedy is when it happens to you. And I would propose that that's the difference between terrorism and a just war. A just war is when, you know, we fire a bomb in Japan or drop atomic bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Terrorism is when people crash airplanes into buildings in New York City.
Yes, but we have, as we started out the program today, we have a body of reference. We have a law. We have laws very clearly defined and codified. And one would assume that the reason for that is that it applies across the board. There are no exemptions. There are no, you know, exceptions to the rule here. We have the laws, and still we find that these things are not uniformly classified.
Laws are almost never universally applied. There's statutory law, and then there's common law. And too often, what is statutory law and what is common law is determined by power.
So power is the, but whose power? Is it the state power, or is it a small elite power? Which power prevails, and which power gets to call it?
I would say it depends on the circumstances. There are times when I wish the state power were greater to deal with corporate power, and Monsanto wasn't permitted to oblige farmers to grow genetically modified crops. However, there are other times when selective prosecution of whistleblowers makes me wish that there were more checks on government power. I can't make a blanket statement to answer your question.
I get you. Thank you so much. Thank you for contributing today, Louis. Enjoyed it. Well, Rudy's back with us from Montreal. Hello, Rudy. You're on the air.
Hello, you, Therese. I wanted to say a couple of things here. Somebody said quite interestingly that bombing for peace is like fornicating to advance the cause of virginity. But regarding terrorism, I think that terrorism will probably come down if the world would acknowledge and stop the circumcision of infants because of the what happens after in their lives produces a lot of psychopaths. And these people...
Well, here's the thing, Rudy. I understand you have an issue there, but could you kind of stay within this little box that we're dealing with? Because what we want to do today, the piece of work that we're hoping to achieve, is to get a clearer understanding of how things get to be defined in such a way that it should raise questions to us about who gets to call the shots? Why are certain exceptions made? Why is it that we have a uniform code that's supposed to guide the conduct of the government, and yet we see clearly that there are exceptions? And sometimes things are called acts of terror that normally should be called resistance, or as Tariq Ali was telling us yesterday. And this is where we are going today. Could you contribute to that discussion?
Well, I say again that the basic foundation is the feelings of terrorism is harm, either physically or mentally, to another person. That should, I don't know if it's that definition, but if it is, until the basic reason why people act the way they do, why they write the way the laws the way they write them, how they act towards one another, there must be a fundamental reason, and I believe that part of that is circumcision.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your contribution. Well, we're looking here clearly at the political underpinnings. And the political underpinnings of government behavior, government conduct, and how it shapes the entire society. We're looking here at how each of us is compelled to think. That is, unless we put up a resistance ourselves, that we have independent minds, that we have different points of reference that allow us to see things differently. But I think you will agree, the vast majority of Americans will fit into the mold of being told what to think, because there's a cooperative press that has taken on, in very enthusiastic ways, the job of psychologically conditioning the society the way the government wants the society to be conditioned, to think in a particular way. Because when your mind is captured, the way you think will inform your actions. And your actions, of course, will reflect your decisions. And it becomes a full circle. You are therefore completely pliable. But we see, and this was the point I think that Marcus was making and Sean was making, the idea is that we are at the point, I think, globally, this is what's happening. There's a realignment of effort. This attack in Paris is forcing the coming together of people who had lots and lots of problems with each other. But they share a common goal, and that is to mold or remold the societies that they have into a machine, an economic machine, a political machine, a social machine, a cultural machine, once again. And they weren't able to achieve this with the apparatus that they have called the European Union. And so this is the perfect time when something of this magnitude occurs and you swoop in and you define it. You don't give it the proper definition. You don't give even the whole definition of what people are witnessing. You tell people what they're witnessing is just terrorism. You excise it from, and you lift it out from its historical context, its cultural context, its racial context. And so it has no beginning. You see, it has no derivation. You don't need to go back there and check whether what is linked to what and how do these things may have impacted the actions of the individuals or the act itself, and therefore how we should look at this act. And again, this is not to suggest that in any way we think this is excusable, that violence of this magnitude is excusable, or that it is right and just. We're not making that argument at all. But we're saying we have to see this in perspective, and we have to understand what is happening. And there is a coming together of forces who have decided, based on what they see, the world is galvanizing itself. The world of color is galvanizing itself. It is behaving way too unpredictably. The methods of control are cracking, and in some cases are being supplanted by people who, in their own way, whether with sophisticated weapons or whether with slingshots. They're reacting against domination. They are disagreeing. And they have reached a point where they have redefined what life is, what is important in life. And their definitions are so completely different from what was expected. Their behavior is so different from what was expected. And so, all the more reason to become more and more determined to not just conquer, but to absolutely contain, to suppress, to oppress. This is what's going on. And the specific event, the specific tragedy, these attacks in Paris and in other parts of the world have a common story. It is not pretty. It is not even, in some cases, logical. But it is telling powers that the way you defined power before, forget it. It is not happening. We have our own way of asserting and affirming our power. It may be completely distorted. It may be absolutely wretched and wrong and genocidal, even maniacal. But what is important to understand is we now have the means, just as you always have had the means of control. And on the basis of that kind of thinking in all these different pockets of the world, there is a realignment of thought. Because whereas people used to be very obedient and predictable in their obedience, they are now behaving unpredictably. And there's nothing scarier to an empire than people who are behaving very unpredictably. The statistics are telling us that the world is becoming more and more black and brown, people of color. Black, brown, yellow, whatever it is you want to put, but non-white. The population of Europe is not growing fast enough to replace those who are dying. The incursions are beginning to happen, and this is how they're interpreting these things. This is not just about a religious fanatic group. This is about incursions. They're bringing the war to you. They're bringing the war. It used to be these people stayed put in their country and America exported the war. Britain exported their war. France exported the war. It's reversing. This is psychological shock of an extraordinary nature to the systems. And now they are beginning to understand they have something in common. And what they have in common is that they are witnessing in so many ways direct challenges to the old order, the standing order that we can and will utterly and completely control you, your land, everything you have. That formula, for all intents and purposes, is dead. So we will see greater violence on the part of the empires to contain what they see as incipient, coordinated rebellion. Wherever it's occurring in the world, they will interpret this to be the same story. They have to get at this quickly and fix it. And the only way they will fix it is through absolute and unimaginable force. It's coming. Thanks for joining me today. And stay tuned right here at PRN.FM. Coming up next, it is the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. I thank you so much for the caliber of your input. It is consistently high caliber thinking. I really appreciate that. And it is a pleasure and a great privilege for me to be in your company. And I thank you so much. See you tomorrow.